Greetings, and welcome to another crossover of the Thirsty Mage and the Talk Nintendo podcast. I am your host, David Lloyd, and on this episode, our cast wanted to remember a simpler time. So we've dusted off our gray bricks, and we're going all the way back to 1990. And we enjoyed a Capcom classic, Gargoyle's Quest. Everyone on tonight's panel was alive back then, though the only person who actually probably played it as a kid is our reviews editor extraordinaire, Jordan Rudick.
So, a quick anecdote time. The Game Boy that I had was actually bought secondhand from a video game store that I really liked called Willow Video Games. It was probably about an hour away from my house back then. This store was like a, you know, to someone, you know, young kid who's like really interested in video games, like they had all these cool, like old used video games that I'd never seen before, obviously. And yeah, I did have Gargoyle's Quest growing up, and that's one of the inspirations for why we decided to do the episode. The other one was, and it's funny because it involves one of our crossover guests tonight. We did an episode on Yoko Shimomura a couple months ago, and she is the composer, or well, one of the composers for Gargoyle's Quest. So that was another reason. I think it's during that episode we were doing some research for that episode, and Gargoyle's Quest came up as one of her part of her discography. Gargoyle's Quest, great game.
And fresh off destroying his coffee pot in a rage quit from tonight's game, it's one half of the Talk Nintendo podcast, Mr. Casey Gibson.
Yes, the better half. Yeah, unfortunately, I was going...
I was like, man, he said one half.
Yeah, you know, I had to get my dig in on Jordan and, of course, the decaf. And I've got a sink that it's sort of like two sinks, right? And then it meets in the middle, so you have like that sort of center strip that's a little thin. And I was balancing on that, and I was like, I better get this text in. And then it fell over and it broke. And yeah. Yep.
You're making
jokes
fun
on
of
me.
Jordan's coffee. Yeah. And you broke
classic.
The coffee pot.
Typical man.
It's not classic. That's a beginner's mistake, thinking that you can balance something on that partition. No man, no woman, no one can balance anything on that partition. It's not what it's there for, Case.
I tell you what, just about till I hit send, it was doing pretty good.
That is poetic justice if I've ever heard it.
You know that old expression makes a lot more sense now, which is, never make fun of a Canadian's decaf choice or you'll break your coffee pot. I always wondered why they said that.
I should have gotten one of those.
Well, karma is always on Canada's side, you know, so.
I'm going to go balance it on the sink partition in my house, see what happens.
Take a video.
Yep.
And rounding out our panel, as Jordan just said, he's the part of the inspiration for tonight's...
Lesser half.
Yeah, part of the inspiration for tonight's episode worth is bringing up Gargoyle's Quest a few weeks ago. He's a TUI creative director and the other half of the Talk Nintendo podcast, Mr. Perry Burkham.
Thank you. Yeah, I am the lesser half only in a spiritual form and physical form.
Your beard is thirds. Probably one of those thirds by now, isn't it?
And I do want to say that... Yeah. No, I shaved that beard off like
and it's back.
A month ago, but it's almost back. So, no, I do want to say that I was not alive when this game came out. Actually,
he wasn't even
wasn't
a twinkle
even
in his dad's eye.
I was actually I was born in 92. So this was 2 years before I was born.
What a baby boy.
So yeah,
that's no excuse for not playing it in 1990 though.
That's right, but I do love this game. That I know.
One of your parents should have played it at the very least.
I know. Well, I did. Yeah. Actually, my mom did love to play Tetris on the Game Boy.
Oh so. Yeah, Gargoyle's Quest and Tetris. Not, you know, it's a pretty easy jump from one to the next. Yeah, I agree.
Same thing, really. Same thing.
Well, we better get into tonight's drinks. Jordan, do you want to kick us off with your sugary drink of the evening?
You've been starting with me a lot lately. I feel like there's some animosity growing between us. I'm not sure, but and I've been very well behaved lately. And last week was a little bit of a blip, but before that, I brought both my White Claw drinks, and you'll be proud of me once again tonight. I've got a Lone Tree Old Growth Orchard Cider. It is apple cranberry, 5.5%. So I'm not even close to whatever percentage you've brought tonight, but you know, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Pretty good, actually. Like, I do enjoy drinking cider. It doesn't always agree with me, especially on an empty stomach. I generally need to be eating something at the same time as a cider. But, yeah, quite tasty. Cranberry apple. I like when it's, like, apple something. I think next week I'm going to talk about, or next episode I'm going to talk about Apple Pear, but we got like a variety pack. So it had dry apple, or just maybe just called dry cider, cranberry apple, apple pear, and then there's a ginger flavor. My wife likes the ginger flavor. I tried it and almost spat it out. Like, I don't know. Ginger in some things I like, but if it's too much, I don't. But the cranberry apple's nice. The cranberry, you can really, you kind of smell it and you get a nice hint of it too. It's very tasty. Probably a little too sweet for some people, but, you know, I can't stray too far from who I am. So the old Lone Tree apple cranberry cider. Not a bad one. Probably one of the better ciders I've had.
I was going to say, you get respect for the alcohol, but technically I was not incorrect when I said, what's your sugary drink of the evening?
Yeah, no, I think if you say that 9 times out of 10, you're going to be right. So
that's right.
Until I'm bringing even if I have green tea, I put honey in it. Yeah, I don't, unless it's probably water. Water's maybe the only thing I've brought to the podcast that didn't have any sugar in it.
You sure you're not drinking Propel water? You know, a little sugar in there?
I haven't had a Propel water probably in like
days,
10 years or something. Yeah, days, right? Yeah, 10 years funny. Or something, like since I stopped playing basketball. But
I remember when those came out and everyone was like, that was the drink.
It was
the
drink everybody had. If you went to the gym or you were playing sports or something, everybody had those. Yeah, yeah.
You had those Propels, man. Mm-hmm. And all it was just like crappy water. Yeah. I'd rather just regular water, you know?
I eventually switched just to going back to Gatorade or Powerade because at least it tastes better, you know?
I'm a Gatorade man. Yeah. Powerade's a little too sweet for me.
Okay.
I'm a Powerade man. Oh, baby.
Now, can we just determine whether Gatorade or Powerade is owned by Coke or Pepsi? Are you betraying your keepers here, Casey?
Powerade is owned by Coke. Gatorade is not owned by
anyone, right?
Pepsi.
They're probably
they're their
very
own.
Good. Okay.
Just, well, no wonder why I hate Powerade.
Powerade is a Coke.
Just checking.
Well, since this is a crossover, I think it's only fair that the portion of the discussion that at the beginning for the Talking Nintendo podcast should be about food and not drink.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I was going to have a nice cup of coffee to keep me going here, and that sort of went the wayside as the glass shattered into the sink. But, yeah, I've got water with me here.
That's so sad.
And I ate some fried chicken for dinner. We did a little order in. Got some Church's chicken, some fried chicken biscuits. I had these jalapeno poppers. Mmm.
Jalapeno.
I'm not sure that I've been on a podcast or listened to a podcast with Casey, you or Perry, where you haven't talked about some kind of fried chicken in some form. I don't think there's been one. I'm looking forward to the day when
it will never. I hope that never.
Okay, I have a very Canadian, not understanding American things question for you too. How do you? What is chicken fried? Do you like chicken fried things? Do you have chicken fried steak, or is that like a staple to you guys? Like, enlighten me a little.
That's
bit
the only
here.
Thing that I know of that's chicken fried. That's not chicken. It's okay. Chicken fried steak. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't just chicken fry other things.
I've seen chicken fried chicken.
No.
And then I've seen the chicken fried steak. That's at like a Cracker Barrel.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys have those up there.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
David.
Yeah, that's like they're known for their like chicken fried steaks and chicken fried chicken. Yeah, I don't know.
And they're actually known for their little bottles of syrup.
I know,
too.
And you could go to a place games. Like Denny's or something, right, and get a chicken fried steak, like a breakfast food, right?
Yeah. Well, they go between. There's like country fried steak and
what's
chicken fried steak. They're kind of you can.
Okay,
I don't
okay.
think there's a difference. There probably is technically. There's probably someone going. Yeah. Actually, the difference is.
Well, here you go.
The
what is the
of,
difference between
baking
country
soda.
Fried steak and country fried and chicken fried steak? Is that what we're
yeah,
talking
I
want to
know.
About?
Hit us.
Now, the main distinction, there's one clear difference between the two dishes, the color of the gravy.
Okay,
country
yeah.
fried steak is covered in brown gravy, while chicken fried steak comes with a peppery white gravy, and chicken fried steak usually has a crispier coating.
Now, are you two fans? Are you fans of
sense.
Either of these dishes? Like, is it something you're seeking out?
Oh,
okay.
Oh, yeah.
Them.
Yeah, country fried steak
I always get
is
country
good.
Fried steak when I go to a, yeah. Mm-hmm. Always, it's like usually like my dish because it's such a big, delicious thing.
And I feel
thing.
Like it's something you don't make
and
at
then,
home.
Oh, and then
yeah.
you get,
you know, it's one of those you get out at the restaurant.
I do that. Get a sunny side egg, put it on top of it, break the yolk, all over that bad boy. Oh yeah, now we're talking. How is it that I'm so full that I can almost barf? but I'm still hungry right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah, me too, man.
Speaking of fried chicken, I have a drink that has 16 herbs and spices.
That's basically fried chicken, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, what a beautiful transition.
Wow, that's right. This is so I have a strong amber ale from Brasseurs du Monde. I believe it's called A Table. That's what it says on the front. It's in French, so I'm pretty sure it still means at the table.
An accent on the A?
Beer de bouffe, so food beer. So there's a big old steak on the front that they suggest to drink it in, but which I thought was kind of funny as a vegan. But it tasted great. I love my strong ambers. It's funny they call it a strong amber. They must mean taste because it's only a 7%. So,
Well, 7's not terribly. It's not. That's normal. Stronger than a normal beer, right?
That's Propel water to David.
Yeah, that's stronger than an American beer, I guess.
Yeah, Americans.
I suppose the bottle is like a wine bottle, so I don't know. I enjoyed it though. I love my amber ales, and so before the isolation, I stocked up on a bunch of different ambers, and I actually had a Keller beer this week, which is. I think I brought it up. I would have talked about it tonight on the podcast, but I'm pretty sure I used it before in a previous episode. But yeah, it's pretty good.
You've brought up Brasseurs du Monde a bunch of times, I'm sure of it.
Oh yeah, even lately, I think, because picked up a few. Unibrew, they make it a bunch too. So that's one of the things is we're on episode 53 here now, so it's getting more difficult by the episode to drum up some new. I know there's
fresh
lots
beers,
but
yeah
it's the local I might have to start going to other stores because the only so many brews can be kept in the local grocery store. So
the problem with you, David, is because you're vegan, we can't determine, or you can't determine, whether this beer goes well with a country fried or chicken fried steak.
We'll
have to ship some to Casey and Perry and see what they think.
It went good with my with my fake chicken burger tonight, though. So,
that's the thing I haven't tried, like a vegan chicken burger. Obviously, I had vegetarian burgers before, but not a chicken one.
Yeah, no, it's terrific. My son, he's.
You can call whatever you like when it's a vegan burger. It's a vegan steak burger.
Tofu made to taste like a fried chicken, which is kind of funny though, the chicken talk. But yeah, it's really good. It's the kids' favorite. They love when we get it. But the problem is trying to find it. A lot of times it's sold out in the grocery store. But I can't remember the brand, but it's like one of those general brands too that you usually see in the stores. Like I think it's Eves or something like that.
Yeah, I know the name. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, if you go into the grocery store and go to the vegan cold, usually they have like their own section for the cold stuff for the vegan, and it's next to the veggie meatballs. So.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I might give that a try because I am curious to try more of these kind of meatless products, right? Like I think we seem to be heading more towards that direction. Just seems to be better for the planet and everything like that. So I'm curious to try a chicken one anyways.
Yeah, it's a good jumping in point.
It's funny, David's been getting all the vegetable, the vegetable meatballs, and it's funny because I've been getting all the meatball vegetables.
Perry, I genuinely want to know what that is. Like I believe you entirely, but I want to know what it is.
Oh, it was just a joke. It was just a play on backwards where I eat vegetables made out of meat.
He's calling me a meatball for
meat out of vegetables.
I think you guys are both a bunch of meatballs right now, but
couple of giblet heads.
I literally just had meatballs for supper. That's funny.
So I do have another quick food anecdote before we start a discussion of Gargoyle's Quest proper. I ordered Skip the Dishes this evening. We were getting Japanese food. And the problem with Skip the Dishes is if you live in an apartment or a townhouse, you can't put your unit number in the address slot. You can only put like your kind of street address, right? So if you have a unit number, you're supposed to put it in the notes at the bottom. So what happens with places or outfits like Skip the Dishes, Uber Eats, DoorDash, whatever, is if that's the case where you can't put the unit number in the actual address, then they can't put your exact property into their GPS, right? So if you put in 9111, you get to just a part on the street, right? You don't actually go inside my townhouse complex. And so I see, I'm watching the car on the little map, checking kind of where they are relative to my place. And I see them kind of stop on the main road without going into my complex. And then it says order delivered. And I'm like, oh crap. Like,
oh no.
Did they just leave it at like the corner where you would turn out of my condo set, set of houses there. So I walk out of my building. I go to the kind of the corner where I think he might've dropped it off. There's no food there. So I get on the chatting app. Normally they would call you if there's some kind of problem, but because they're doing the touchless delivery, right, or contactless delivery, they're right now they're just going to leave it at a person's door and just drive off, right? There's no kind of confirmation or anything like that. No, they're not actually handing it to you anymore. At least that's what's happening here in Richmond where I live. So yeah, I get on the chat program. I'm like, oh, hey, you know, I didn't get my food, even though you marked it delivered. And they basically just say, like, oh, yeah, we're going to follow up with the driver. And then I have to keep pushing. I'm like, okay, well, like, I don't have food for dinner. Like, my family needs to eat. Like, my kids got to eat before they go to bed. And they're like, oh, yeah, okay. They're kind of humming and hawing. And eventually, like, I push them. Okay, yeah, we'll give you a full refund. I'm like, yeah, of course you're going to give me a refund. You didn't give me any food, right? And yeah. So I was pretty choked by this. Like, I felt like the customer service for Skip the Dishes was pretty subpar tonight. And you know, I kind of asked, like, you know, if you want me to come back, I hope you give it some kind of credit or some kind of like bonus to my next order, right? Because it's pretty piss poor experience.
You're
tonight,
not instilling, right? Well, like, skip the manners that to order again.
I mean,
yeah, that was we did Grubhub.
Okay. Yeah, I know the one. Yeah,
and like they had some sort of, we could like a 2-week trial for free, and it gives you like free delivery, so we're like, all right, let's try it.
Yeah.
And the first night we did it was great. We did the contactless, whatever, just like, you know, leave it at the door,
yeah,
and like ring
thing.
The doorbell. And they like rang the doorbell and gave it to us. But then we did it tonight and it was a little late, but yeah, they did, like, they knocked on the door and just like,
and they
left,
just left,
the
right?
Floor.
Yeah. So I was a little miffed today because they literally skipped the dishes by not bringing me any dishes of food at all. And so I ended up just ordering from a different place and going to pick it up myself. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Just a bad Skip the Dishes dinner time. I was pretty upset by it, you know, just because I was walking around my whole complex trying to figure out where they dropped off this food. But I literally have no idea where the food ended up. So I guess the silver lining is someone got $70 worth of Japanese food. So yeah, I hope it didn't go to waste, you know, like, because Skip the Dishes gave me my money back. So someone ends up ahead tonight.
Well, that's,
it's just not me.
You know what? I gotta say, if it was Casey, he still would have tipped the guy.
Well, here's the thing: you tip in advance. Right?
Casey tips.
You
everyone.
Tip in advance with this one, right? So I had no choice. Like
Tip in advance.
You put
what?
The order in, and then it asks you for the tip at the same time as you submit the order.
Why?
Because they're doing the contactless.
That makes no sense.
They're doing the contactless.
Why wouldn't you leave a tip after?
Because then.
So, what do you mean?
Then you would have to
give them a tip afterwards.
Well, because then you'd either have to contact them or like sign the receipt or whatever. The whole idea is like to have like no interaction.
No interaction. You're not talking to anybody. You're not seeing or having any interaction with anybody. So. Yeah, you tip in advance in this one. I think they might have even brought this in earlier.
Well, no wonder he's leaving your... he gave it to a bum somewhere.
I guess...
Are you...
I already got my tip,
Jordan
Giblet.
Yeah,
well, the story is perfect. It's given me a perfect inspiration for tonight's last call. So we'll have some more fun with this. So.
I'm expecting another segue as good as your last one, David. That was amazing.
He only gets one an episode.
That's
so
right.
Your expectations a little lower.
But before we hit the last call, we better talk about the game first. So is Gargoyle's Quest.
That's a good idea.
Published and developed by Capcom back in 1990. Early Game Boy title. Yeah. The brief story is it's about Firebrand. He's
The music's great, actually. I really like it.
I was giving you some music to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna do it with
Perry's
my voice
rendition.
Now.
Perry's rendition's even better. You can fire Shimomura now.
Yes. Yeah, so this is about Firebrand the Gargoyle. A group of destroyers have infiltrated the ghoul realm, and they've been laying waste to it. And the whole point of the game is to get to the king of the destroyers, Brigger, and win back the or drive them off, kill them off, and save the ghoul realm. So it's yeah, pretty straightforward. And there's a little backstory at the beginning that you can read through. Back in the day when you couldn't just blow through the text, you had to.
Oh, dude, the text in this game is painful.
It's very slow. It's very slow.
I love it.
It's slow, and I love how like segmented it comes in. Like so, like you're reading the sentence like super fractured.
Yeah, and there's a few broken English sentences there here and there too, which made it even funnier. Especially when you're like, "Wait, did I miss something? Did it skip somewhere?" Even though the text might not be as impressive, the game especially for a Game Boy game and an early Game Boy game, I thought it was pretty impressive what they managed to get into here.
The game, it's amazing. Yeah, I love. I mean, I just went back to it, played it today. Oh my goodness, dude! What a fun game. I mean, you know, there's that jump, the sticking to walls feels so good.
It really holds up.
I mean, and like even that first level is so, it utilizes, like, it's such a great design because there's so many, like, first of all, freaking hard, right? And then it has, like, you get hit twice, you're done. But, I mean, the game's not really, I mean, once you get the idea, I mean, it's really fun, like, you know, because you can stick to a wall for as long as you want. You know, there's a lot of things. You can hover and you can jump pretty far. The hovering is pretty, it's pretty, what am I looking for? Forgiving, you know, it and you know, the hit detection is pretty good. It's just that, you know, once you get hit, if you kind of go in blindly on some stuff without, you know, really taking in everything, you can get hit and it's hard. And then it's game over, you know, if you lose two lives. So it's tough. And there's like a boss on the end of the level. And I just think it's pretty amazing. I think it's an impressive game even for an NES game, you know. It's let alone a Game Boy.
I mean, this released during basically the first year of the Game Boy, and you weren't expecting to see such quality titles in that first year of Game Boy, right? Like, it took many years for developers to come out with really strong platformers like this one. You got a lot of puzzle games early on in the Game Boy's life, right? Things that were a lot simpler than this, but yeah, this is underrated, I think, is one word to describe it, but I think it still holds up very well today.
100%.
You know, like Perry, you're right. The introduction stage is excellent for introducing you to the game and really teaching you how important patience is. You're not supposed to rush through this game or rush through the stages. You're supposed to kind of take them, go kind of screen by screen, right? Kind of test where, find out where enemies are, come up with a plan, figure out, you know, the height of your jump and how long you can hover. Really, a lot of the danger is in going too fast or rushing into situations that you're not prepared for or where you don't know what's coming in next, right? Especially, I think about the spikes that are kind of littered around the screens. A lot of the platforming involves avoiding spikes that are on the walls below you and especially above you. But all of that can kind of be figured out with knowing the height of your jump, how long you can afford to hover in the air while you're attacking enemies. It's a really, really fun game.
Yeah, it sort of goes along with Capcom's sort of philosophy back then, because even Mega Man, you know, like the early Mega Mans were very methodical. You would sort of take your time approaching each area and you know, obstacle and stuff without trying to sort of blow through it, which is funny because, you know, my early, like, introduction to Capcom was, like, Mega Man X, which is very much, like, fast, you know, go fast, you know, destroy enemies. So it's interesting to see, like, their original philosophy was a much slower paced thing, and that, you know, might have to do with the hardware it was on.
Yeah, sounds like the Game Boy, it's perfect. Right?
But yeah, it's really a pretty great game. You know, it's, like you said, you end up going side scrolling through these areas, but then there's an overworld map, and you actually encounter random enemies, right? Sort of like an RPG, but instead it's just sort of like a small little platforming area with enemies to dispose of, and then, you know, you sort of blow through those guys, and it's like, hey, you did it, and then you can go back on. So I thought it was sort of an interesting mix from an RPG side of things.
Yeah, it was kind of like Zelda 2 in that sense, where other than, like, in Zelda 2, you would see the shadows on the screen, and When one of them hit you, then you'd end up in that little mini side-scrolling thing. But with Gargoyle's Quest, it's you don't see them at all. It's just that it's like you said, an RPG random encounter where it's just, oh, you know, now you got to defeat the guy if you want to keep moving on.
Man, is Gargoyle's Quest and Zelda 2 like not in the handful of like games that deserve remakes the most? Like, my goodness, I could see both those be so awesome. Because, you know, the difficulty is pretty hard, and I think that's, you know, a sign of the times, and you know, also getting a bang for your buck, right, back on the Game Boy and making it a little longer. But yeah, like the way, the slow movement, and I love the aesthetic of the game. I mean, and I guess, did you mention that this is a spinoff of Ghosts and Goblins?
That's right.
You know, which is so cool. I mean, Firebrand's in there, and then it's so weird. I love that little. It's such a weird subgenre, like just where this fits in. It's kind of like the, you know what it reminds me of? It's kind of like the Wario Land, of the Ghouls and Ghosts series. It's kind of like the Super Mario Land version of it, just kind of different and better in some ways.
Yeah, well, it doesn't feel as punishing as the Ghouls and Ghosts or Ghosts and Goblins. Like, this seems more... like, it's a lot
definitely.
Smoother. It's you don't get the cheap deaths. Like, I felt like, like whenever I died, it was obviously
better.
My fault. I didn't platform or I didn't do something. Like, I never felt like there was just like some cheap enemy that kind of popped off screen. Like, when I got to a certain area, it's like if I had taken my time and timed my jumps, then everything would be fine.
I mean, there's two huge differences, obviously, between Gargoyle's Quest and the Ghosts and Goblins series, and I think they both kind of involved the jumping. In Ghosts and Goblins or Super Ghouls and Ghosts, when you jump, you're committing to that movement, right? And once you've done it, you can't go back. And if you've made a mistake with your jump, you're gonna get punished for it. In Gargoyle's Quest, you have the floating, you have
literally
the ability
opposite.
To hover in the air, and so you can kind of test something out. And if your jump doesn't work, you hover back, right? You have a lot of freedom to experiment with your capabilities, your powers. The other difference is that Ghosts and Goblins is obviously a very horizontal game, right? A lot of it is you're playing on a ground level and you're just destroying a lot of enemies. Obviously, that lends itself to the fact that was an arcade game and you want to get quarters out of everybody. Perry, you mentioned like this game being very difficult as a way of padding it out. Of course, it's ultimately a very short game. I think you could complete it somewhere in the realm of 90 minutes to 2 hours if you wanted to, if you're running through it pretty fast. But, for Game Boy games, like I don't mind that. I don't mind a game that kind of makes itself a little bit longer by asking you to maybe play it a little bit more slowly, to maybe play it more methodically. I like that about Game Boy games. It's why I have so much kind of nostalgia for that platform,
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
I thought they did some really, Perry alluded to it a little earlier about just like the atmosphere and aesthetic of everything. I think like the boss battles were fun, and interesting
fun.
And they really like make them stand out and look unique, and obviously the Game Boy, you only have so many pixels and so much to work with. Now you do run into a little slowdown.
Yes.
When there are like a couple monsters moving on the screen and you're sort of jumping up and down and shooting out your flames, whatever the heck you want to, whatever they upgraded up to. But, I mean, not terrible, not enough where it's really making
Frankly,
it unplayable.
Not even as bad as the Ghosts and Goblins games, which is, it kind of shares that style and that, maybe that programming. But yeah, it was noticeable here, but not game breaking.
Yeah. I feel like I need to say this just because when you say spinoff, I feel like this is one of the things that, like, it makes it seem like it's more lesser of a game or something. But I would say that Gargoyle's Quest is a billion times better than Ghosts and Goblins.
Huh?
I don't think he's exaggerating at all.
I think Ghosts and Goblins is unplayable.
I totally agree.
I just, Ghosts and Goblins, I would say the Ghosts and Goblins is gorgeous and it's funny, it's cool. I love the art style. Gameplay is just too hard. It's not fun. And then Super Ghouls and Ghosts is just similar in a way. It's like one of the most gorgeous games you've ever seen, but still, it's just like trying over and over and over again. It's just something where it's like, I just did not like it. But Gargoyle's Quest is like, oh my goodness, this is unbelievable. And So really, I remember saying this now, because when we talked about this on Talk Nintendo, which is probably 3 years ago now.
Is that crazy?
When I said that, it's unbelievable, that Frasier is to Cheers as Gargoyle's Quest is to Ghosts and Goblins. And I stand by that statement. And I think it's a pretty good analogy. And I think it applies really good because David, as we all know, was a writer for both of those series. I don't know if anyone knows that, but David Lloyd was the writer for Frasier and Cheers. Did you know that, Jordan?
I'm always impressed when I learn more about David. He's got this kind of mysterious background or this career I've never even heard of.
I used to watch the end credits in Frasier because I'm pretty sure his name came up early too.
And Cheers.
I always thought
he's one of the creators, I should say. Yeah. He's the creators, yeah.
Hold on, Perry. Just to complete your analogy or to confirm my understanding of it, are you saying Frasier is a billion times better than Cheers?
No.
Just checking. I'm curious.
No, that's good. I wouldn't say it's a billion times better, but I would say that Frasier, I do like it a lot better than Cheers in a lot of ways. But no, I love Cheers. So that would be the difference. But still, I think the analogy hits on a lot of notes that I think.
I think it's tough, because I think they're obviously developed for different platforms, and I think that when Ghosts and Goblins was released, it was I think the arcade game came first. So you're basing the NES port off an arcade game, and maybe they shouldn't have maintained the difficulty all the way through, but. I kind of understand that maybe that school of game design. You guys got to stop typing in the Skype chat. You're distracting the hell out of me. Like I lose my train
of thought.
Tracy
posted
so
a picture
easily.
Of David Lloyd.
At any rate, like I think they come from different places, right? I'm with you. I do prefer Gargoyle's Quest. I really like this game, but Super Ghouls and Ghosts I think fixes a lot of the problems that the NES and maybe the arcade game has. I really do think the transition to Super Nintendo, of course, visually stunning for sure. But it does a lot of things to make you more powerful. The fact that you get a double jump really allows you to correct yourself in midair if you've made a poor jump. And I think there's something about learning the stage design as well, as opposed to the NES game, Ghosts and Goblins, where they're just throwing tons and tons of zombies and enemies at you. I think the Super Nintendo game, Ghouls and Ghosts, is a little bit more fair in that regard. But, I mean, we're talking about Gargoyle's Quest, and I do appreciate the comparison. I do think it's a better game.
And it spawned off its own series, I guess we can talk about the stuff afterwards. I don't know.
Well, just to go back to the nostalgia part, Jordan had brought up something that I didn't know when I was playing. I believe we all played on 3DS. That I was unaware that if you held L and R, you could switch between black and white or the Game Boy's original green.
Yeah, that's so good.
And I was also not.
You didn't know that?
Yeah, I also didn't know that you could get a Game Boy border that changed it to the original resolution either by holding Start as the game.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two things I'm going to be trying.
It even does the 3D. If you put the 3D out, it puts the Game Boy border in front a little bit, so it looks like the original Game Boy. It's pretty
such
amazing.
A cool touch. And I don't think no one ever talks about this. And I think it's just one of those small little Nintendo kind of tweaks or mechanics that they put in. And it's a really nice throwback to be able to play those games in the original style, right? I think, if I'm not mistaken, I was reading somewhere that with Pokemon Yellow, when you put on that Game Boy border, I think it might even be like a Super Game Boy or something like that. Someone will have to check that for me. But
I think it's the Pikachu Game Boy color or something like that.
Awesome, okay.
Man, I have that Game Boy.
Cool. That's amazing. Yeah.
I have that virtual console. I'm going to have to try that.
I have the Yellow Game Boy Color Pikachu edition with the Pokemon Yellow. Still have them.
Have you guys done a Pokemon?
No, we did.
Not an old one.
Let's Go, right?
We did Let's Go and Sword and Shield. Like we've done the Switch ones. Shield,
We need to do like
we
a red.
We want
to
go back.
We should do a red, blue, yellow. That'd be amazing.
Perry, Casey, who's the last person? David and I were talking about this recently, actually. So, if you guys want to do another episode like this, I think we should. But We're getting off topic. I did want to bring up kind of a little bit of my experience playing the original game, or just kind of thinking back to it. Obviously, very, very difficult. I think if you're, you know, you're 5 or 6 years old, like, this is a challenging bloody game. Maybe now, you know, the kids are, I think kids are generally better at games, so they start playing them a little bit earlier. But yeah, this was tough. I didn't know where to go. Like, it wasn't, obviously, it's an action platformer, but that overworld element that is reminiscent of an RPG. And I would have played the original Final Fantasy around the time, maybe a little bit before I played this game. So I'm kind of familiar with that look, but then it turns out it's not actually an RPG. It's a straight action game, right? With some adventure elements too. Right. The funny thing was, like, if you're playing this game on original hardware, there's no save states, so you're relying on passwords save your progress. And there's the hilarious dialogue that the character uses when you go into town. They refer to the password as a resurrection spell.
Yeah,
it's a very cute, kind of charming, like, in-world kind of joke, I guess. You know, like, it's really, you could tell how much kind of attention to detail they put into this game with just, like, subtle things like that with the writing. You know, obviously there's some translation errors and things like that, but I do love the world. The world of this game, it's not large, but it does feel kind of interesting, and it does have this atmosphere to it that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
So good. I love that medieval with zombies, you know, that.
Yeah, I've like always loved gargoyles that. That's in like, general, you know, like.
yeah, it did inspire the Night Fright game that we did, you know, on mobile.
Oh,
the
Atari
game. It's the same exact, you know, the knights and the, you know, and the zombies and everything. I love it. It's so weird if you think about it, but it just works.
Also the fact that, you know, why are we talking about Gargoyle's Quest in an RPG podcast? Like, there's a lot of small or light minor RPG elements in this game. There's the random encounters. There's the overworld where you're walking from town to town. But also the way you, David, you had written this down in the notes, the way you power up, right? So Firebrand, he gains extra health power ups. His attack power goes up based on the new move, the kind of new attacks or new abilities he gets. His ability to hover, his kind of stamina meter goes up. But more than that, there's also just the fact that when you go into a town, you see NPCs scattered around, and you're supposed to talk to them to learn where to go next, or to learn just more about the world in general. And yeah, obviously that's reminiscent of something like Zelda 2, but if you look at a town, if you just look at a town screen of this game, it looks like an 8-bit RPG, right? Like you can easily confuse this for a game like Final Fantasy, like Dragon Warrior, right? Or the Final Fantasy Legend games. When you go into a town, they look just like the towns in this game. So I think aesthetically, this game really reminds me of an RPG, and I think that's why it's kind of worth talking about on a podcast like this.
Well, is there a better moment in the game than when you get the infinite hover?
Oh, it's the best. You just want to stay in midair.
Yeah.
I was going to say, even early on, like when you first go to like the second level, like right off the bat, you get this, like, what seemingly impossible jump, right?
Yes.
It's like, and at first I was thinking, okay, like, and I remember David said in Slack at some point, I think he said, like, oh, this jump is so tough or something.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, is this the jump? And like, I tried to find the picture of it, but, you know, I forgot. And then I was like, man, this is brutal. Like, I thought you had to jump and then jump back and like, clip up on the ledge, and I was like, oh my, and then I was like, let me go back. There was a town back there. I had to go back to that town and sort of poke and prod around a little bit more, and then all of a sudden you learn, hey, this guy needs, you know, he lost something, and then he ends up giving you that power up that lets you jump higher, and then you go back to that jump and you're like, oh, it's actually not like an impossible jump, I just didn't have the tools to do it, you know. So I like how that sort of
it's
unlocks
a Metroidvania.
Yeah, I like how it unlocks it that way, though, by sort of rewarding you by talking to different people.
Mm-hmm. Another thing about that, kind of related to that, Casey, is that just another kind of interesting world building things that it does is the names for all of those abilities and items that you acquire, they're all very like kind of obtuse, or they sound very like powerful and fantastical, you know, like Fingernail of the Spectre, and all it is like an extra hit point or something.
Yeah,
the silver staff of who knows, and it's like you get a little bit more stamina for hovering, you know. It kind of, again, another cute thing about the game, like, clearly, like, put
great
these fun little touches into it to make powering up to make progress feel meaningful. Like, hey, I have to go on this big quest.
It's everything.
I have to go on this big quest. It's going to take me like 5 minutes because the game is small, and I'm going to get this cool new awesome sounding ability. And it's really just a small upgrade in game, but it sounds really neat just because of the way they write everything, right? So I love that part of it.
Yeah. It's, I know, it's like, I just got the talisman of the Godfather, yeah. Or something like that.
Well, even, that's the lives, right? Like, instead of having, like, one life or two life, yeah, you have to have the talisman of the cyclone, I think.
That's right, yeah.
Yep, yeah, that's your right.
Lives. Yeah, so, yeah, it's pretty
There's another potion, too. It's like Essence of Something? I can't remember the name.
Yeah, but that's a continue, I think.
If that's the continue, there's one that refills your health, actually. I don't know the name of that one, but it's very, very rare. You can get a potion in your inventory that actually restores all your health points.
Okay.
So if you're down to one and you've got three or four, you could save it for a boss or something.
Yeah, it's the Essence of Something, but I can't remember.
So Essence of the Soul Reaver, I think it's called.
Yeah. To spam that.
Yeah. We haven't talked yet about some of the different attacks you get in the game, which I think are actually really interesting. So you've got your basic kind of fireball that you start off with. The second ability you acquire is called Brick Breaker, and it's funny because it looks like a boomerang, but you can launch it at breakable bricks, and you break your way through, and that's how you navigate some of the later stages in the game. Some of the final stages of the game, you have three or four different attack powers, and you actually have to rotate between them to navigate the maze or navigate the labyrinth that you're in. The coolest one, though, has got to be, I don't remember the name of it, but it allows you to fire a projectile that actually creates a platform on the walls. So you spray this attack at you shoot it at a wall of spikes, and it temporarily creates a little platform you can jump off of. Does someone remember the name of this one?
I think Gust, I'm looking, just Claw, right?
Oh, Claw. It might be Claw, yeah.
Yeah,
so
So
you use Claw on the spike walls. And there's levels later in the game where it's all spikes. And so you have to keep spraying the claw on one wall to create a small platform for you to hang on to. And then you keep doing that back and forth as you scale up the spike wall. So, yeah. Just
Jordan
really
has
kind
a different
innovative
kind of claw this week.
I do. Yeah, no claw for me. I had to move on to the cider. But, kind of another innovative thing to the game adds to the platforming element. And then one of those later dungeons, you're just switching between the different powers, and some of them don't even hurt certain bosses. Like, you have to change between, you have to go back to one of the lower ones or go to one of the higher attacks to damage some of the bosses too. So yeah, just, I don't know. It mixes,
quite
it mixes
a bit
up the gameplay
of depth,
a lot,
you know, for a Game Boy game, like all things considered, especially like early on, mm-hmm. You know, I feel like a lot of the games early on were just sort of pooped out. You know, or maybe had one idea and sort of ran with it and was like, we could, you know, get a couple hours out of this and call it a day. But it seemed like they really were trying to make it feel like there was growth within the character. You know, even though it's not like the longest game in the world, it's constantly doing different things, which I think, you know, helps to make it fresh.
Yeah, and this is, you're right, Casey, wonderful. And this is one of the ways that it also differentiated itself from its parent series, the Ghosts and Goblins series, is it had these new power-ups that you pick up that enable you to traverse the stages differently, right? Like, we would see this in Demon's Crest. I haven't really played the sequel, Gargoyle's Quest 2, for NES. I'd like to go back to that. I think it's on Virtual Console as well. But I've played Demon's Crest, and that one you actually gain, you actually transform into these different types of gargoyles that have different powers that let you kind of that's much more of a Metroidvania, obviously, because you're going to different stages after you get new powers, right? But we see the kind of genesis of that gameplay style in this first game.
Absolutely, yeah. That I was going to say, because I played through Gargoyle's Quest 1, 2 and mm-hmm. Demon's Crest all together, like in the same 2 weeks, and it's chronicled on Talk Nintendo. And Gargoyle's Quest 2, it's pretty much the same thing as Gargoyle's Quest, but like on the NES, there's some other things that I don't like. I don't like it as much. There's some things that I can't, funnily enough, I cannot remember exactly why, but I liked the Gargoyle's Quest on Game Boy a lot better. And they actually, this is actually kind of a fun little trivia, they released Gargoyle's Quest 2 on the Game Boy.
Oh,
Japan.
Really? Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah, and Jules has that game. He has it in
he
box.
He would.
And it's one of my envies. I know. Well, that's the other thing is that another game that's, you know, that really the only game I can think of that's really similar to this is Mutant Muds. Crazy similar, you know, how the jumping and the hovering works.
Yes,
And just how the gameplay feels. And it feels so, it's like that, you know, there's like no physics, you know what I mean? It's not like a jumping and it feels like you can, that level of control you have, it just feels so good on these games. And that's why in Demon's Crest, I don't really like, I think from the beginning, you can like fly, like pretty much infinitely.
I don't think, yeah, you might be right. That I don't remember a stamina meter. I think your jumping height like, might be short. Or not overly long, but
yeah,
you might
descend a
little bit. But
and it just doesn't feel as good. It's like, I mean, that game, honestly, Demon's Crest is like seriously one of the most gorgeous games in existence. Yeah. And it is a fun game. But I think that they take some liberties in that game that it just makes it a little too, like, not as fun. So I honestly, Gargoyle's Quest is my favorite of the trilogy, but I would gladly take a new entry in the series.
Does Jordan or Casey have any final thoughts on Gargoyle's Quest? As we promised ourselves we'd keep it under an hour, so I'm...
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, it's just... Yeah, I mean, I had forgotten if I... I know I've played some Demon's Quest, and I'm pretty sure I bought... Gargoyle's Quest 2, because I think I remember RFN was talking about Demon's Crest, and I was like, man, I really got to play that game. And then I ended up buying Gargoyle's Quest 2 by accident somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I remember playing that.
I remember this. Yes, I remember this.
Yeah, I don't know how I botched that. So that's why I was actually...
Typical,
yeah,
Mac.
Before we had... before, you know, when we started to play this game, I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure I bought this one. And then I looked and I didn't. So I must have originally bought Gargoyle's Quest 2 instead of Demon's Crest. But yeah, no, it really, like I said, surprising, you know, like the level of depth that this Game Boy game has. You know, the jumping and the platforming feels great. Like you said, I really love that latch onto the wall, you know, because there are definitely areas where you're sort of descending. And you can sort of descend because you can sort of flutter down, right, with your jump. But it's nice to be able to sort of latch onto the wall, refresh your jump, and be able to hang there for a second and sort of evaluate the situation, you know. So be like, let me see what's going on here. Okay, like this is my best, you know, plan of action. And yeah, I think it's, you know, it's $4 on the eShop. I think it's definitely worth checking out. Like I said, it's not a super long game, but, you know, for $4, it's not like, you know, I guess you really can necessarily expect hundreds of hours, you know, worth of gameplay. But yeah, definitely a really cool game.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I have a lot of fondness for the Game Boy, even though I don't think I ever owned a lot of Game Boy games, or maybe just, you know, even in my whole life, I've ever played that many Game Boy games. But kind of looking back at them, just the visual style, the sound chip of the Game Boy, I really, really like the way it sounds. And Gargoyle's Quest kind of nails all those kind of different... It kind of checks all those boxes for me. It's got compelling gameplay. It looks great. It sounds awesome. And it's still very accessible today. I don't know that there's a ton of...
Just super hard.
I mean, it is hard. But, like, it's accessible because of things like save states. Because of the fact that you don't have to use the Game Boy green shade and play with, you know, your nightlight on, right? Like you can play this on a more modern hardware like the 3DS or a 2DS XL like I was playing on, and you can still get a really good experience out of these games. So if this is one of your Game Boy blind spots, and or if you haven't played a lot of Game Boy games, like this is an easy recommendation for one. I think a lot of people are familiar with the Game Boy because of its puzzle games and because of some of the, you know, maybe Nintendo first party ones. But this is a really great, especially Pokemon, especially, right? Like where everyone knows Pokemon for Game Boy. But I think this is a really good Capcom game that certainly it gets overlooked because they didn't continue the series, right? Like we all know about kind of Ghosts and Goblins.
It's unbelievable.
And we know kind of about, I think people have heard of Demon's Crest. There's a lot of good word of mouth for Demon's Crest, but these are games that have flown under the radar. And this is one you definitely want to go back to.
Yes.
And the fact that it combines, there's no other game like Zelda 2 on the Game Boy. Like, this is the closest we have to something like that. And I think Zelda 2 is kind of this very, very interesting experiment of a game. And so you get the version of that on Game Boy, and it's definitely worth trying if you've never played a game like this. So, yeah, it's a full recommendation for me. I don't think it's perfect. I think there's the difficulty is a problem. You get some repetition with the enemies, the slowdown. Some of the random encounter rates can be high in certain areas of the game. And it can be a little bit obtuse if you're not talking to every NPC that you see. But it is quite a linear experience, so you can't get lost for very long. And I don't think you can either get it stuck for very long either. Eventually, you're going to figure out what to do.
It's got Casey's vote. Yeah.
It's got my vote. I think it's worth the $5.
Right on. Yeah, it's super cheap. They just buy it.
Yeah, I would just say because this was during an era where I was discovering a lot of these Capcom classics. Another one that you could totally put on that list is Bionic Commando.
Oh yeah,
especially the Game Boy. It's amazing. It's in the same. Bionic Commando is unbelievably good. So and it's really almost says everything you just said applies to that. And they did do like a new Bionic Commando game, like for the Xbox 360 or something.
Yeah, that was weird.
And apparently I don't know, it was weird or something. But the grappling mechanic is so good. But yeah, those like Bionic Commando and Gargoyle's Quest, those two Capcom games on the Game Boy, oh my goodness, wow.
Do you know if they kind of stand up,
yeah, like you said, not perfect.
Is it on the Virtual Console by any chance? I would love to play it if it is.
Yes, and the sequel, the Game Boy Color sequel, which is
fantastic.
Really fun too.
Okay, I'm gonna have a look at those. That's great.
They're awesome. So good. They're so good. Yeah, they're really fun, and they're very similar to Gargoyle's Quest in a lot of ways too.
Well, this is a good time in history to be diving deep into the backlog. So, if you're at home and you're looking for something to play, it's definitely worth it.
I mean, the 3DS continues to show its value, good. Just as a repository for classic Game Boy games. Like, that's reason enough to own one as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, and you did mention obviously all the features it has where you can put it in pixel perfect mode. Unfortunately, I think the 3D, I mean, yes, that's cool. It makes it really small. Yeah. So it's funny where I'm stuck in between where it's like, okay, do I want to view it in its pixel glory but really small, or do I want to big it really nice and big but just like really looks bad on that fully. And so I wish that's where I was talking. We were talking about what could be next for Nintendo and just the concept of like a really high resolution 3DS, essentially, where it's meant for backwards compatibility. I think that would be so cool. Then they could release like all of their old catalogs on Game Boy and not have that. Like, imagine playing this game on the Switch. It would be
so. Perry, I'm gonna grant your wish right now, and it's coming this year. Or it was supposed to, and I think that's the Analog Pocket. I think the Analog Pocket is going to kind of, in a way, fulfill that prophecy. You know, it's going to give us the resolution we want, the backlit screen.
But can you buy? But you can't buy the digital.
No,
games,
I
you have to
I
buy the real
so,
games.
So.
Yeah, and yeah, the analog.
It'll be expensive,
which is cool. I love
Pocket
it.
Pocket is expensive too,
and it probably doesn't have save states.
I'm day one.
And I am worried about that D-pad on there. It looks like metallic. It doesn't, or something. Like, it
but
looks
you
like
can,
it might
the thing is, you can dock it too, right? If there's games where, like, if the D-pad is a problem, you can dock it. Like, I appreciate the.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
I appreciate the trepidation, but I'm really hopeful that system is going to deliver.
Are you picking it up?
I will pick it up. I'm gonna pre-order as soon as it gets announced. Just because if anything, just to, I want to try it. Like, I want to see how good it is. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, do you have an AGS 101 Game Boy Advance SP with the backlit screen? Oh yeah, that's how you could play that game. I'd love to play this game with that system.
Those are beauts.
I have two of them. They're amazing.
The last call this week, it's off the cuff. I said, I was inspired, and it's actually non-video game related. It's inspired by our food. So the last call question is, you hear a doorbell at your home. You go, you open the door, no one's there, but there's a bag of food underneath, just sitting there waiting for you. Do you eat it?
Depends what it is.
No, you're not allowed to do that, Casey. I mean, you have to, as soon as you open it, you must eat it.
I guess it also depends at what point of the day. So I don't know where it came from. You know, if it's dinner time, your boy's a little hungry. I might roll the dice.
You would roll the Okay, so we're saying if this random food came to your house, you would roll the dice.
I mean, it depends what it looks like. If we're talking like it's like a home cooked meal from someone, I'd be like, all right, that's a little weird, you know? Like, I'm gonna pass on that. But like, if all of a sudden it's like, oh hey, oh, it's a like Wingstop just random container food
from something else.
Like, someone delivered Wingstop to my house by accident, or maybe they just like me. Maybe they wanted me to eat some Louisiana rub and some French fries, you know? And I'm hungry.
Wow, I know how to poison Casey really easily now.
Hey, at least I'll go out on top.
It's a lot easier than I thought.
I'll be sitting there like, man, yeah, life's great. I got free wings, a cola, oh, baby fries, and then I'll just die.
Yeah, I'll send you out with some class. Yeah.
He's going out on top.
That's amazing.
Casey, tomorrow, my plan is that you'll open the door tomorrow, and I'm going to do an overnight to you from Amazon, a new coffee maker, okay? Because I feel bad about you breaking your other one. So I don't know about a bag of food, but I'll try to find you a coffee maker, okay?
I don't know. You might lace my coffee container with, like, anthrax or something.
No, I'm just going to – there's going to be a stipulation attached to it. You have to have decaf only for the rest of your life.
It'd be like on Justified where the cups were poisoned. Did you guys ever watch that?
Right. What? No.
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 Second season of Justified with Timothy Oliphant. There's like the country folk that are selling drugs. The way they kill people is that she pours lemonade, but the cups are pre-poisoned. So there's poison.
Little tricks,
like,
classic.
Yeah, in the cup. Because everyone thought the lemonade was poison, but it's not the lemonade. It's actually the cup is laced with poison first.
So what David is saying is the food that gets delivered to your door isn't poisoned, but the styrofoam containers are laced with poison.
The straw is all sorts of trouble.
Yeah, see, and that's what Casey would do. He'd be like, oh, I'm not going to eat these chicken wings, but I could save these styrofoam containers for you.
I would hate to waste them.
These are perfectly good styrofoam containers.
I'm pretty happy that we've spent Easter weekend talking about a game starring the Red Devil and poisoned food and poisoned lemonade. It seems like we're really on brand here for a holiday weekend.
We're celebrating right.
We're in the festive
mood.
Hey,
not only are we on brand, we're on fire brand.
Okay. Just cut the podcast now. We're not going to end better than that. I'm sorry, guy. We'll give you out the email and everything next week. That's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, bravo, Perry. I think I've said this once in my whole life.
Absolutely,
I'll give it to
intended.
Perry on that one.
I want to.
Hey, you gave it to me
that's
earlier
what I'm
tonight,
saying.
Too.
If you check Skype, I actually wrote that joke all for right. Perry and teed it up for him, too. But last time you guys
thank
checked
you.
Skype, you
I
shut
appreciate
you
it,
shut
Jordan.
Down the whole podcast. So yeah. I know we're gonna edit
hey,
it out.
It's better than Jordan just word for word, just saying what I just said the last 45 seconds of my speech again.
Did I really?
Like last time.
I don't even realize when it happens now. So.
No, you didn't do that. Now you did it last time.
It's okay.
And somehow you don't listen to me. What I say, and you repeat exactly
you
what
talk
I say.
Too much during
it's amazing.
The podcast.
It's an amazing.
About half of what you say, a third of what Casey says, most of what David says, because I don't talk as much. But
I have one last thing to ask.
It's not. I you know, it's not one last thing. You're gonna do five more things.
No. It is, and you can end on this. But I
firebrand.
So David told us a little bit around like a while ago about the toque. You know.
Oh yeah, you gotta wear a toque, baby.
Right?
I guess I got my country fried
now,
question in,
now,
so it's fine.
Is it toque? And you Canadians say toque?
It's not,
is that
it's
what's going
not
on here?
Toque. No one says toque is when you're smoking a joint.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, I was just making sure. I was just
has
making sure.
Has anyone ever said toque
like,
to you?
Did I not realize
Perry,
that as I was talking to David?
To you and meant a hat?
No.
Are you going to toque
no.
on that?
No. No one
I'm
said
send,
toque to
okay,
me
so
either. Besides
Casey,
David.
I'm sending you a coffee maker. I'm sending Perry a toque, okay?
You sending him a pipe?
David, I can't. I don't know. I'm going to
no,
send
he's
you
just
some vegan
gonna,
chicken
he's just
going
to blow
guess,
smoke
but...
into a styrofoam cup and send it to Perry.
That's right. And Perry's the one who gets taken away by the fans.
This just makes... Happy Easter to all. And to all of you,
needed to say that 5 minutes ago before you quit.
All right, Jordan, you better hit us with that outro before we say something that's going to get us in trouble with the federal authorities.
Sorry.
Firebrand.
Okay, so we want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you to Casey and Perry for joining us. It's always fun when we can get together, and I'm glad we've been able to do this a couple times now. And the original Pokemon games on Virtual Console might be a good way forward for our next episode too. I'd love to talk about Blue, Red, and Yellow especially.
We could try and get Perry to commit to Shin Megami Tensei 4.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought that up, Casey, because I've been thinking about this all week, especially when I was in the shower today. How do we get Perry to get into RPGs? Like, could we make an episode where it's all about selling Perry on RPGs, where we pitch him, like, here are the most accessible RPGs for, like, someone who's not really into RPGs or not really into, like, kind of, especially, like, turn-based JRPGs. What are some of the best, like, straightforward or more accessible, easier-to-play games?
And I don't
save
think
it,
you
save it, save it.
It's not turn-based. It's anime stuff.
Well, I was just going to say, there's like, you know, the greatest RPG of all time. There was a really nice, convenient, awesome remake for the DS, and it's not a really long game, and it's super tuned perfectly, and it's really fun, and it's awesome.
What is it?
I've tried it multiple times, and I couldn't get into it,
and it's one of my favorite games.
My hope is that for that episode in the future, your answer is just World of Warcraft, and you really want to get into that.
Which expansion?
World of Warcraft.
At any rate, yeah. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. We're definitely going to do this again soon.
Yeah, we'll do all these episodes and more.
I mean, we've got a lot of good ideas, and I think we can come up with like lighter episodes or maybe lighter RPGs to talk about when you guys come on, so that's always fun. Again, if you have any questions for us, you can email david@thethirstymage.com. You can hit up the podcast on Twitter @thethirstymage. Please give us, you know, suggestions, recommendations for episode. I know a listener recently DM'd David with some suggestions for games, and it was a huge list, and we're definitely going to try to get to some of those. So stay tuned, and thank you for that feedback. If you can leave a review for the podcast on your podcast app of choice, that would be awesome. Let us know how we're doing. That kind of feedback is great. Subscribe if you haven't, obviously. But yeah, if you could tell people about the podcast, we're hoping to grow, especially this year. We've got a lot of time to play RPGs right now and talk about them. So it's a good time for us to kind of just make more content and hopefully get more people listening to it. We've got a couple cool episodes coming up soon. We're going to be talking about Final Fantasy VII Remake, obviously, in the not-too-distant future. We're excited about that. We're going to do an episode about RPGs that we weren't able to finish or kind of just dropped off. We lost interest in them. So I think that might be our...
I'll be on that episode.
But Perry, for you, that's every RPG.
There'd be no time for anyone else's.
That was a joke.
That's right. Well, Casey, that's usually the case when we talk with Perry, anyways. David, did I get everything there? I know I always miss.
Yeah, no, it's pretty much covered everything. The only thing I would add is the thirstymage.com website is it's getting really. We're getting a lot of the content on there now. It's finally coming together. So if you wanted to see some YouTube reviews or some news that basically it's when I see news I think it's important, I throw it on there. So if you want a curated news list, that's a good place to go to.
Right, and that gives me a chance to mention that I'm doing a review for Sakura Wars for PS4, so that's going to be a review coming up on the site in a couple weeks, I guess. Yep. But yeah, you can find lots of RPG reviews up there, and the podcast is obviously linked on that page as well, so thethirstymage.com.
Yep. And we're going to be covering Trials of Mana as well as that comes out too.
Yep, and Trails of Cold Steel, which we talked about the demo last week, right? Casey and Perry, where can people find you when they want to catch the Talk Nintendo podcast?
They can go over to Twitter and check out Talk Nintendo Pod. That's Talk Nintendo.
P-O-D.
Ooh, sounded like I caught Perry on the other side of the room. Yeah, Talk Nintendo Podcast. It's the best spot to catch us. You know, we release weekly on Thursday. Haven't missed an episode ever. So you can always rely on about an hour and a half to 2 hours of a couple of giblet heads rambling about video games and food.
Mm-hmm.
Not just food, like almost exclusively Wingstop. I swear every episode. I don't dislike it because it's always a different take. Or you're talking, you know, a different Wingstop experience. Mm-hmm. But If you're a Wingstop fan, Talk Nintendo Podcast got to be your first destination.
We're really going for that sponsorship. Yeah. We really are. I mean, so if people could write them, that'd be amazing.
I don't have solid facts, but we're, you know, the leading Wingstop podcast in the world.
Wingstop influencers.
I would say so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Give me that Parmesan garlic.
Talk Wingstop POD. It's good. You guys got to get that Twitter. Get that Twitter handle while you can, you know?
Yeah.
At any rate, thanks everyone for joining us. Hope you enjoyed listening to, certainly a lesser known game, but definitely a hidden gem on the Game Boy, and very accessible through the 3DS Virtual Console. You can easily get your hands on that one. So we'll wrap up here. We'll talk to you again soon. We're going to be recording another episode shortly. Our recording schedule is a little bit funny this week, but this episode will be out soon, and then another one probably to follow shortly after. So thanks again, everybody, and have a great night.
Bye.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Did you guys see that tweet from someone named Cassidy Gorbins? They said that they want a WoW episode on Thirsty Mage.
Yeah, I blocked that person.
Beat it, Cassidy.